ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Will living a life of dharma, being charitable, sharing what one has, distributing, giving time, energy, money for social well-being, or social service activities, will they not give me pleasure? Will they not make me happy? That's the question I heard from people now. I tell you, Shastram does emphasize that definitely whatever we do must be contributive for social well-being. All our actions, we are going to understand the very teaching, must be in conformity with dharma. When Shastram says, actually others' well-being is very much kept in mind. So apart from this, apart from doing our own duties and actions in conformity with dharma, any mature individual being will be chased, driven to do something to remove the pain others go through. The reaching out activity is actually again impelled by your own situation, condition. So all forms of charitable activities, which includes even giving money, helping in the possible way to alleviate other person's pain, we reach out, means reaching out activities are because mainly you want to get rid of the suffering, the pain, the trauma you are going through when you see others suffering. It's a great thing. We should definitely do, we must do. Shastram does appreciate it. It's called Poota Karma. Poota Karma means all forms of social service activities. So such activities will help you expand, will make you subtler minded, will make you a sensitive person definitely. Means all such activities will contribute for your mental preparedness. No doubt. We should, and it's highly appreciated. And it's a punya karma. You will definitely earn abundance of punyam, no doubt. But what Shastram says, it comes under the category of dharma. Dharma pursuit. So whatever you do, how much ever you do, still it is an action. And it will produce the punya phalam. And which can be translated, which will get translated into the experience of pleasure in your life. So every time I give some money, I feel so happy. Every time I do something for the poor, the downtrodden, I feel really Now pleased, I feel there's a lot of, so much of joy in my mind. People say, that's true, no doubt. But the joy, the pleasure you experience, you have by sharing, by giving, distributing in any form is only a fraction of fullness. So pleasure is fraction of fullness, but fullness is not pleasure. Happiness is not pleasure. Again, why do you want to go out of the way, or why are you chased to do something for the well-being of others? Because in fact you want to get rid of the suffering, the pain you go through. You see others suffering. Ultimately, you reach out to remove other person's pain, because by removing other person's pain, you are freeing yourself from the pain you are going through. Ultimately, what you are doing is you are working for your own happiness. That is why Swamiji made very clear, there is no such a thing called absolute selflessness at all. And nothing wrong in being selfish. Being selfish is very, very natural. Being selfish means whatever I do it for my own happiness. You will say my own pleasure also, doesn't matter. You are doing it for your own pleasure, your own joy, your own happiness. Nobody can do anything only for the sake of others' happiness. In making other person happy, you are happy. You are searching for your joy and pleasure by making other person happy. Don't think that I am doing what that person and this person. And whatever you have been doing for others also, and afterwards you say, I did this, I did that, nothing was recognized. Now my work was, you always say that. You know what Swamiji used to say? If you have been doing all these things, if you did not do all these things, what do you think you would have done? Swamiji used to ask me, he used to ask this, which means whatever we could do, we were doing, and then definitely we are doing ultimately for our own happiness. So definitely any dharma, any charitable activity is fine, it's very good, but we should remember we are ultimately doing for our own happiness. By doing dharma, by giving, by sharing, by helping other people, relieving other people from their suffering or pain, definitely you are searching for your own happiness means you are intelligently selfish. By going against dharma, if you want to be happy, then which means you are foolishly selfish. So being righteous, being charitable makes you an intelligently selfish person. But we don't know that, otherwise we will be foolishly selfish. And what Shastra says is, ultimately what we are searching for is happiness. And that happiness cannot be gained as a result of an action. What is there already has only to be discovered. That is why you need jnanam. It's very important. Knowledge is the means. Because ignorance is the cause. When what is the solution? Knowledge is the only means. Let me give an example here. Don't stretch the examples. Understand the example and leave it there it is, there itself. People who are yet to, just very newly exposed to teaching, and sometimes don't think too much and stretch the examples. Understand the examples and then learn what we need to understand there. See, if there is darkness in this room, there's no light at all here. Pitch darkness, utter darkness everywhere. And we're all sitting. no light. You can hear. Luckily, nobody is deaf here. You all can hear me well. And I am speaking, you are listening to me. You don't see my face, I don't see your faces. I am talking and you are listening. Imagine a big snake comes. Imagine. It comes all over. Durga Mandir, you see. There's a Shiva sitting at the end. So doing namaskaram to Shiva, snake also comes upstairs to see what people are doing. Imagine the snake is a huge snake is crawling here. We are all so engrossed in the class. I assume. And then we do not know the snake is crawling. Big snake crawls and comes and sits here. We do not see the snake at all. Just because we do not see the snake does not mean snake is not there. Snake is, real snake is, but we do not know snake is. Therefore, what happens? You are not at all afraid. You do not know snake is. Therefore, there is no fear of snake. Therefore, disturbance caused by fear is also not there. You are fearless because you do not know there is snake. Okay. Now, imagine, and suppose Yashoda makes some modern arrangement, like all the meditation centers, they have dim light. Dim light has to be there. In the, some music, dun, 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 some music also there. Only some music and dim light. There's no bright light, no skylight like this. And then we're all sitting, listening to me. There are a lot of words here and there. In the dim light, suddenly you see the wire, but it doesn't look like wire for you. Wire looks like a snake. Imagine, imagination, okay. Then you think you see the snake. Looks like the snake. Even though there's no real snake at all, there's only wire. But you do not know what is there is only wire. Because you come late. And you see the wire, you see the snake. In your perception, in your vision, there's only snake. If there's pitch darkness, utter darkness, you wouldn't have seen even the real snake. Then there wouldn't have been fear. But in dimness, dim light, you cannot see exactly what is. And what do? You see, you mistake the wire for a snake. You do not know there is error in your perception. You do not know you are mistaking. For you, there is real snake. It looks like a snake. When you see the snake, are you very cool and comfortable? No. You are frightened. Then not only you are frightened, you tell everybody there's a snake. And because you tell everybody also, everybody looks like a snake. And you're screaming and you're making noise, you're scared. The first thing, now you want to, the fear of death comes, oh snake will bite, very close. It won't take very long for the fate snake to jump on you or bite you. So the fear, and you want to, that the minute the tremendous amount of the trauma you go through, and you want to really get rid of the fear, what do you do? Somebody brings a stick and started hitting the snake to kill the snake, because you want to kill the snake, want to destroy the snake. Snake has to be killed. Only then you are safe, to protect yourself from the fear. You try to kill the snake. Will the snake die? Tell me. You hit. One person says, the best thing for us is, we are not able to kill the snake. Let one person be hitting. We'll sit in a corner and sing bhajans with a duffly. Sing in praise of Bhagavan. All singing will do. Will singing, of course, singing bhajans in praise of Bhagavan definitely is very good karma, no doubt. But will that act, is a very punya karma, it's a very good action, but will that act remove the fear of snake? It will help you forget the snake for some time. Because you're engrossed in singing, it helps you forget the snake for some time. Therefore, as long as you do not remember the snake, and you are free from fear. The minute you stop bhajan, again snakes will come to your mind, again the fear will come back. Somebody says, no, let us dance. So some dancing. So singing, dancing. Somebody says, let us go and do some service. Let me give some dhanam. Kur comes temple, give some money to people. Something. Or distribute prasad. Do some from where the, why? All that you want to get rid of the fear of snake. You want somehow kill the snake. Because that's, you can't be peaceful as long as you think there's a snake. Or some, no, let us meditate. Sit in a corner, quietly meditate. What is meditation? Jumping, physical activity. Singing, oral activity. Meditating, close eyes. No jumping, no moving. So no physical activity, no oral activity. You're quiet, you're meditating. You don't know what you're meditating on also. You're meditating on whatever Bhagavan, whichever form you like. In meditation, will it remove the fear? For you to be free from fear, no physical, oral or mental activity will help. All those activities will hold your attention, will help you forget the fear you have. Why? Because they take your attention away from you, away from this snake. They will distract your attention from the snake. Thereby they will help you forget the snake. And when, as long as you forget the snake, in your buddhi, snake is. But you forget the snake, and whenever you forget, there is no fear. You think there is no fear, fear is very much there, dormant underneath. Because in your perception, snake is. Temporarily you forget the snake, because you are, other activities keep you busy, occupied. That does not mean you are a fearless person. Are you a fearless person? No, fear is there. But fear is not there because the snake is forgotten for some time. Because attention has been grabbed, taken away by something you engage yourself in. Something keeps you occupied and engaged, busy, so you forget. And that is called what? Pleasure. Okay? whenever you forget the presence of the snake, and when your mind attention is engrossed in something else is holding on your attention, you forget, then there is no fear. Means it is not fearlessness, it is temporarily you have some fearless feeling, which is pleasure. Understand what I'm saying? It will come back. Whenever you are not busy, when no singing, no dancing, no meditation, nothing, and you come here, snake alone, you will see. There will be fear again surface. Fear will surface again. Where was his fear? Is a new fresh fear? No. Fear is already there. Only thing is, when it is, does not surface, when the fear is not there, fear is not absent there. Fear is latent, dormant, inner subconscious. And the situation comes when you don't, nothing is there, again the fear of snake surfaces. And you are in between, afflicted by the problem of fear. And you want to get rid of this fear for good. I don't want this fear to come again and again. Whenever I do something, I forget, again it comes back. Nothing is there to keep me busy, occupied, it again surfaces. What should I do to get rid of the fear? The snake should be killed, destroyed for good. And now you know very well, if there is real snake, you can kill it. The snake is only in your perception, isn't it? What is the way? How you can? If you are free from the hold of the phenomenon called fear for good, there is happiness. Okay? Then don't worry about the pleasure. Whether you are engaged in something, you are not engaged in something. Whether you are doing something, you are not doing something. Whether you are meditating or singing or dancing or not doing anything, there is always happiness. There's fearlessness. Whether you do something or don't do something, there is fearlessness. Always there is fearlessness. There's no discomfort of having the fear. There's no burden of being frightened. You're free. There's fearlessness. When, if you know the snake is not there, you cannot kill the snake, cannot undo the snake, not destroy the snake, because there's no real snake. In your perception, the snake is. So for you to be a person of fearlessness always, whether you are doing something or not doing something, to be a person of fearlessness, all that you need to do is, you don't need to change anything outside there. In your perception, the change has to happen. You should know what is, there is no snake. Now you see, you think there is a snake, but you have to know, you can't think there is no snake. You have to see there is no snake. For you to see there is no snake, you have to know what is, isn't it? And some buddhiman purushaha comes, an intelligent person comes. My God, why are you struggling so much? Let me show you, come. Turn the lights on. Let me see what it is. Also bring the torchlight again to take it slow. Shows closely. It's called analysis. Closely. Oh. What is a wire. Close analysis leads you to with knowledge of what is, doesn't do anything, isn't it? You discover, what do you discover? What is the wire. The minute you discover the wire, how long does it take for the snake to disappear? How long does it take? Simultaneously. As you are seeing the wire, the snake disappears. The snake resolves in the very wire. Isn't it? There's no need for you to chase the snake away. There's no need for you to drive it away. There's no need for you to kill it. The snake just resolves in the very wire. You see, there's no snake at all. What is wire? Why did you see the snake? How come that you could see the snake? Because you did not know what is wire. So what paved way for you to see the snake, first of all? How come that you could see the snake? You are not knowing what is this wire. No, the ignorance of what is wire. You did not know what is only wire. If you knew that what was only wire, then how can you think of snake? The very perception of snake itself, the erroneous perception of what is not there, seeing what is because you do not know what is. Therefore, the only way you can resolve the snake is just seeing what is. So seeing what is called jnanam, knowledge. Once you see what is the wire, and without any effort, simultaneously the snake resolves there, your perception changes. Isn't it? You say what is rope, what is wire means there is no snake. And along with the snake caused fear also resolves. How long will it take for the fear to resolve after resolving the snake? So seeing the wire itself is what? Resolving the snake and having the fear caused by snake also resolved. Isn't it? The fear goes, fear is resolved means what is fearlessness. Is it clear now? Suppose in the bright light, and the light is, all the lights on, lights are turned on, switched on, and you also bring extra torch light and you see it closely, with close analysis, and you're 100% convinced what is only wire. You cannot see any snake at all other than the wire. What is only wire there? The snake is not there. Isn't it? So in bright light, you see what is wire, there is no fear. In utter darkness, you do not see the real snake also, there is no fear at all. You do not see what is. Therefore, there is no mistaking also. In utter darkness, you do not see what is. Therefore, you cannot mistake also. You cannot mistake anything. Nothing is seen. You have to see something to mistake it, isn't it? There is no error possible in darkness. In total darkness, utter darkness, no error is possible because nothing you see. Therefore, there is no fear. In utter darkness, when nothing is seen, there is no fear at all. There is no error possible, no fear is there. In bright light, you see what is, then also there is no fear. There is fearlessness in pitch darkness. There is fearlessness in bright light. Is it okay? When is fear? Only in dim light, fear is. Only in dim light, error is possible. Is it clear? Only in dim light, error is possible. Mistake is possible. Only in dim light, you cannot see what is. Similarly, when you do not know you are, when you do not know what you are also, like in sleep, there is total ignorance, isn't it? You do not know you are. Therefore, you do not know, you cannot know what you are also. Then ignorance is total. In total ignorance, there is no dukkham. There is no sorrow. Very good idea. You can fall asleep. Isn't it? In total ignorance, there is no pain. There is no dukkham. That is why we all love sleep. In sleep, there is no knowledge, I am. So you cannot, you need not know what you are also. There is total ignorance in sleep. Then there is no dukkham at all. Sorrowlessness. In total ignorance, there is sorrowlessness, which is bliss. In total knowledge, if you know you are, you also know what you are, what the truth is. Then also there cannot be error in your perception. Okay? Then also there is no dukkham, there is happiness. When is this dukkham? Only when there is, in total ignorance, no error is possible. Therefore, there is no sorrow, there is bliss. In total knowledge, no error is possible. Therefore, there is no dukkham, there is happiness. But in half-baked, okay, in half-knowledge, half-ignorance, error is possible. You know you are, but you do not know what you are. This is like a dim light. Okay? Half ignorance, half knowledge is like what? Dim light. You know you are. There is no total ignorance. But you do not know what you are. The half knowledge, half ignorance is like the dim light. Therefore what? Error is possible. You know you are, but you do not know what you are. Therefore, you mistake yourself for something what you are not. You mistake your body for yourself. You mistake your sense organs for yourself. You mistake your physiological functions for yourself. You mistake your mind, your thoughts for yourself. Isn't it? You mistaking yourself for something which you are not is what? It's called adhyasaha, erroneous perception of the self. Why do you mistake erroneous perception of yourself. You do not know what you are, therefore you do not know what is wire, therefore you mistake it for a snake. Here also, you do not know what you are, therefore you mistake yourself for the body mind is complex. It's called adhyasaha, erroneous perception. And if you mistake it, it's okay. The error itself does not cause any problem. But what you do, naturally, the limitations of the body, the problems of the physical body, the problems of the mind, problems of the sense organs, they all have the limitations, they all have their problems, they're all superimposed upon you. The body's problems becomes your problems. Mind's problems becomes your problems. And this superimposition of limitations of the body, mind, sense complex is called what? Upon the self is called superimposition, adhyaropaha. And then you look, you see yourself through your body, mind, sense complex. Therefore, you have made conclusions. The body's dharma is my dharma. Body's nature is my nature. A body is subject to death, so I am a mortal. Body has birth, I was born. Body is going to die, body is going to fall apart, so I am going to die. I am a mortal. So the knowledge I am is the greatest blessing. No other creature has, you alone have. I am is what? The knowledge of existence of yourself. I am, when you say, it's an expression of the knowledge of existence of yourself, which is there in the form of a thought. And this knowledge itself is beautiful. This is what distinguishes you from other living beings. But when you make a conclusion about yourself, when you have an image of yourself, your notion about yourself, what you are, I am a human being, I am a mortal. Relatively, these are all facts, not wrong, but they are not absolutely correct. Isn't it? So I am unhappy, I am insignificant, I am a mortal, I am inadequate, I am small, I am small in terms of, I am very, look how nice that person looks, in terms of looks, in terms of academic qualifications, in terms of intellectual capacity, in terms of wealth, in terms of positions, in terms of possession, in terms of infrastructures I enjoy, in terms of manpower, money power, there's so many things, health, in so many respects, I am small. You can't help comparing us with others. So all the notions, Shastra makes it very clear, whatever notions you entertain about yourself definitely is erroneous notion. We must be open enough to listen to what Shastra says instead of coming up with what already I know, what I think, what people say. We have to be open to listen to what Shastra says. That all the notions you have about yourself are erroneous notions. Therefore, what happens? There is a problem comes. There's a problem. And this problem is called common human fundamental problem. It's not just only one person has. All the human beings have this problem. That's why we call it a common human fundamental problem. It's a fundamental problem. What is that? The sense of smallness, sense of inadequacy, centered on I am small, I am inadequate, I am unhappy, I am mortal, I am insignificant. It's a common human, every human being has this problem. We don't need to deny this. It is not wrong to have this problem. It is not improper. It is not something, it's very natural. It's a natural problem. The sense of smallness, sense of inadequacy centered on I is the problem. And it's wrong notion when you have about yourself in terms of I am so and so. I am intelligent, I am unhappy, or I am dull, or I am rich, I am poor, I am tall, I am fat, I am ugly, I am beautiful. Whatever you have, whatever you add to I am, is what you think of yourself, what you are, is a wrong notion. And it is called ahankara. Understand? The knowledge I am by itself is fine, beautiful. So that you are eligible, you are qualified to know what you are. If this knowledge I am is not there, you wouldn't have been qualified to know what you are. Now you are eligible to know what you are because you know what you are. So it's a blessing in disguise, isn't it? It's a blessing that you know you are, so that you are eligible to know what you are. You can make your half knowledge total knowledge. The complete knowledge. Ardha jnanam can become purnam jnanam. Ardha vidya can become purna vidya. If you discover what you are, knowledge will be complete and total. Isn't it? It's a blessing. But the half knowledge is also a problem. Because you mistake like a dim light. You do not know, you mistake. Therefore it happens what? Adhyasa, erroneous self-perception, thereby superimposition of limitations of the non-self upon the self, the wrong notions. And the wrong notion comes, and there is a common human fundamental problem of sense of smallness, sense of inadequacy centered on I. And it is this problem, fundamental problem, gives rise to what now? The pressure of wanting to be different from what I am. The very necessity, the pressure of wanting to be different from what I am. I want to be bigger than what I am. I want to, you know, be different from what I am. I think I am a mortal. I am 100% convinced that I am a mortal. I am going to die one day. Therefore, there is a desire. I want to live. I tell you, if you are given a perfect, healthy, young body, who will want to die? There's a desire to live. Desire to live long and desire to live long happily. And this is again common human fundamental desire. Every human being, every living creature in fact is endowed with this. Every human being definitely endowed with this desire. It's called common human fundamental desire, wanting to live long happily. And it is this one desire gives rise to all forms of desires we have. This is how the phenomenon called desire, subtle phenomenon called desire, obtaining in the form of a thought, comes into existence. What is the cause? What? Why desire? Desire for anything. Is it wrong to have desires? Who said? Nothing is wrong. It is very natural for us to have all forms of disease, different types of disease. The diseases are so many different diseases for different things, but all the diseases of all the human beings for anything basically have cropped up from this root of the fundamental desire of wanting to live long happily. And the desire itself is because of the pressure of wanting to be different from what I am. There's a need. The need itself is caused by what? The sense of inadequacy, sense of smallness centered on I. And when the desires come and we have no say, we cannot undo desires. Please understand, it's not wrong to have desires. It is not improper to have desires. We don't need to, we cannot give up disease. We cannot suppress or undo disease. Destroy disease. That is why it is wrong to say give up disease. And we are not holding on to disease like this. I am holding on to a book, so I can leave the book like this. We are holding on to disease for us to leave the disease away. We can't give up disease. We have to handle, we have to manage the disease. Diseases are very natural. All the diseases are symptoms of the disease of fundamental desire of wanting to live long happily. That desire itself is because of the wrong notion I have about myself. Is it clear? Therefore, the diseases come, we are helpless. We are helpless. And the disease and the needs impel us to perform actions. So actions are, we do that or this or something or other, all the time we are doing because impelled by the disease. And once you perform actions and they produce results, when the results are there, all the results of all the actions we cannot exhaust immediately. We had to wait for the results to fructify, and we had to be around to exhaust the results. Therefore, we have no choice. We'll be born again and again and again for what? To exhaust the results. This is how the rebirth is there continuously. And this being born again and again and again, choicelessly, helplessly, isn't it, is called bondage. Why? You cannot choose not to be born again. You are not free to choose not to be born again. You are not free not to die also now. You are not free to choose not to die. Let me not die. Let me live for some more time. We have no choice. This choicelessness in terms of not dying or not being born again is called what? Not having freedom, which is called bondage. And what is that which binds you with this body again and again is called bond karma, result of action. So it's called the result of action caused bondage is called karma phala bandha, is called karma bandha, madhyama padalopi samasa. Okay, karma bandha, bondage of karma. What is the root cause of this? Ignorance of yourself. Is it clear now? Ajnanam moola karanam. What is the cause for your rebirth again? Karma phalam. The fruit, unexhausted results of actions you have, is the immediate cause of your rebirth. What the immediate cause of the fruit of action? Action. What the immediate cause of the action? Desires. What is the immediate cause of the disease? Wrong notion. You have the fundamental desire of wanting to live long, long, happily. What is the immediate cause of the fundamental desire? Wrong notion you have about yourself that you are a mortal. What is the immediate cause of the wrong notion you have about yourself? Your superimposition of limitations of non-self upon the self. What is the immediate cause of the wrong superimposition of limitations upon yourself? Your erroneous perception of yourself. Why do you mistake yourself for something which you are not? Why do you mistake the snake? Why do you see the snake? Because you do not know what is this wire. Why do you mistake the body for yourself? Not that you want to. It's natural. Natural is error in your perception because you do not know what you are. Is it clear? Suppose you do not know you are also, then bliss. Error is not possible in total ignorance. Error is not possible in total knowledge. Error is possible only if there is half knowledge and half ignorance. Ignorance by itself is no problem. Error is the problem. Is it clear? And that is why all the animals, except human beings, all the animals, all the living beings, they remain steeped in total ignorance. They always have the bliss. Do you think it's better? I could have been a buffalo or a monkey, a donkey. Swamiji used to say, no cow ever goes for any plastic surgery. My horn is little crooked. Because there's no problem. No inferiority complex, no superiority complex. No donkey, monkey worries about daughter's marriage, son's job, or grandchildren's education. Why? They're all in bliss. And if you also want to have bliss, isn't it? That's why please never ever say, we are not interested in bliss at all. We don't need to work hard for bliss. We can fall asleep, can have bliss. You have to lose yourself. You see, forget, you don't know you are, you have bliss. But this human life, the human birth itself is Narajanma Durlabham, very special. You must have done a lot of punyam also, along with some papam, to have this human physical form. You know, if you only papam, you would have been other janma, other physical form, where you wouldn't have been qualified for jnanam. If you only punyam also, you would have gone for some holiday, somewhere up in the other lokas, and you had to come back after exhausting the punyam. But you have both punyam and papam, punya papa mishras, and that is how you are born a human being, and you have to go through both pains and pleasures. No human life is life of pains, life of pleasures also. We have to go through the pairs of opposites are experienced only by human being. Sukham and dukkham. The problem is we want only sukham. That is not possible. Only sukham means what? Either total ignorance or jnanam. But total ignorance is said, bliss means it will be disturbed. Sukham, happiness is everlasting. It has no beginning. It has no end. It doesn't undergo changes. It's always there. Therefore, happiness is the swarupam of the truth, which is yourself. So you, discovering what you are, what I is, you know, but what is I is, you do not know. Discovering what I is discovering the truth of the whole. And discovering the truth of the whole is discovering what happiness is. That is why we say self-knowledge is freedom. Self-knowledge is happiness. And self-ignorance is bondage. Self-ignorance is sorrow. And it is this knowledge which makes a person wise. It is self, as I said, to be wisdom. Therefore, knowledge does not create happiness. Knowledge of what is helps you change your perspective. Knowledge of what you are does not change anything here. Knowing what you are only will not change anything in the world, nor change anything on your part. It will bring about change in your perspective. When you discover what is where, what changes it bring about? No change. It really changes your perspective, isn't it? You see, there's no snake. Similarly, there's no dukkham. Okay? In right perception, it changes the error in the perception of yourself. It changes bring up a change in the perception of the world also. When you do not know what you are, you do not know what this world is essentially. And thereby you mistake the world as a source of happiness and security also. Once you discover what you are, you will know that you are the truth, which is the only source of happiness and security. Therefore, your perception of yourself changes. Perception of the world also will change. This perspective change is the freedom, which is happiness. Isn't it? Therefore, we are not working very hard for bliss. Now understand, ignorance is bliss. And the whole human life is specially blessed for what? For complete, making the half knowledge total knowledge. Ardha Vidya has become Purna Vidya. Purnam Jnanam. Complete knowledge. In total knowledge, there is happiness, there is freedom. And you are eligible to make this half as a complete knowledge. Because you have this knowledge. Otherwise, I could have had registration of all the monkeys and all the dogs on the roadside. The people would have come here, dog lovers would have come here with their dogs. Oh, my dog will have Purna Jnanam. So it won't bark and trouble me. And they can't bring them here. They also don't come. Because they love the dogs more than themselves. So they don't come here. Please don't mistake. I'm not saying anything militant. I'm just saying, as an expression, that's all. What I want to say here is, the whole life is lived. Human life is lived. Ultimately, to discover this swarupam of one's own self, to discover the truth obtaining as one's own self, to make this knowledge total, and which is complete knowledge, which is freedom. And for that jnanam, you need a very unique means of knowledge, and which is the Vedanta Shastram, which is Bhagavad Gita. Okay? And one more thing I have to tell you. When you say, I want to go out. I want to go out and eat somewhere in a hotel, restaurant. I want to buy something. Some new thing has come in the market. I want to buy something. You come to know about the manual comes, advertisement comes. They talk about the new product. Having it at home will be very useful for me. When you know about more about the object and you study that helps you, slowly you develop interest in having it. And you have a desire to buy it. And such a desire you did not have before. I never had desire for laptop until I came to something called laptop exists and how useful it is. The laptop was not even in the market. Then you wouldn't have a desire for laptop. When do you develop a desire for laptop? Only when you come to know what laptop is available, advantages of it, then you develop desire for buying a new laptop, a new gadget. It's called cultivated desire. So cultivated desires can be fulfilled. If it is not feasible for you, even if you don't fulfill it, you are not going to die. You can still survive eating food and drinking water, doing something without fulfilling that desire, cultivated desire. Isn't it? But there are certain things we call desire, but there are natural urges. Know what is the natural urge? It has to be addressed. You cannot just leave it, ignore it. It has to be addressed. It's a problem. So here I want to eat. After eating big lunch, I want to eat ice cream. It is a greed. Okay, nothing wrong. You can fulfill it, you don't need to fulfill it. But when you're starving from morning, not eating anything, you're hungry, you want to eat something, that is not desire to eat. It's just a natural urge, isn't it? Because you'll faint. You can't even sit and listen. So I want to eat. I want to eat something. I want to drink something. Is what? Expressions of your natural urge. And you can't leave it. You have to address. You have to eat something. Isn't it? It's a natural physical urge. Isn't it? Similarly, I want to be happy. I want to be happy always, everywhere, with everybody. I want to be limitless. I want to be happy always. And I want to live long. I want to live long, happily. This is also natural emotional urge, which means it is not cultivated desire. It is natural urge. I want to live long. I want to be happy always, everywhere, with everybody. Is not a cultivated desire. It is a natural urge, which natural emotional urge. It's not physical urge, but it's an emotional urge, which means it has to be addressed. How are you going to address this? Unless and until, please take the statement, unless and until you discover what the truth is, unless and until you discover what this I is, unless and until you discover what I is, thereby what the truth is, and what happiness is, what fullness is, this urge will be there continuously. You have to understand this. Therefore, that is why it's a choiceless end. Knowledge is the choiceless end. How eating the food is choiceless. You have to eat to appease the hunger and to even put this urge off. Also, knowledge is the only means. And this is urge is just as hunger is called disease, you know, because it causes discomfort. Anything which causes discomfort is disease. Hunger is called a disease because when you are very hungry, you will not be comfortable. You will be angry, you will be upset, your moods will change and you shout or scream or you faint. You won't be able to listen. Even children are cranky because sometimes they don't know when they're hungry also. Because the problems of discomfort, expression of discomfort one goes through when you're hungry. That is why food is called medicine. because it cures annam aushadam, because it cures the disease of the medicine, which cures the disease of discomfort caused by the hunger, the disease of hunger, isn't it? And similarly, what it is, jnanam, knowledge of the truth, knowledge of the self, is also called medicine, bheshajam. Bheshajam, medicine, it cures the disease of discomfort caused by erroneous perception, caused by the ignorance. Isn't it? I want to live long, happiness, etc. Therefore, knowledge is the only means for happiness. Knowledge itself is happiness. The happiness is choice at end. To discover, you have to discover what you are. To discover what you are, you need a means of knowledge, which is Shastram. We'll continue tomorrow. Okay? Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat. Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.